Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. That's the phone number for you and me, Lance Meadow and John Schmelt. For the next hour or so, though, I'll have to bail early to talk to Steve Spagnuolo for our radio pregame show this week. We're all trying to catch up to the coach's new schedule, so we're trying to figure out how that's going to work moving forward. I'll probably end up having to not be on Fridays a lot to get these interviews done. But Lance, that's one of the changes we've seen this week over the course of the week, a new practice schedule, Giants getting ready to take on the Dallas Cowboys. And you were on the first day that this was rumored to happen. It hadn't happened yet. I gave my 2 cents yesterday when I opened the show about my thoughts on what happened. I'm sure you guys will want to call in about it at 201-939-4513 and hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. But the changes we've seen this week, so, as expected, have not been drastic. You can't do anything this quickly and turn it around. But the one thing that was quickly changed was the schedule. So the team is out on the practice field practicing right now rather than having their refresh Friday and then doing a launch practice on Saturday.
And some of the veterans who are around with Tom Coughlin as the head coach, John, are used to that. Because remember, Tom had that schedule where they used to practice on Fridays and then they made the tweaks because they wanted to obviously protect everybody and not have the injuries accumulate. So I don't know if this is anything new. And you would think Spags would take from Tom Coughlin considering he was an assistant under him the first time around. So, you know, it's understandable you have some subtle changes, as you alluded to. I would be very surprised if the offense dramatically changes. I mean, Mike Sullivan's been the play caller for a number of weeks since Ben McAdoo gave him those responsibilities. And when Mike Sullivan spoke to the media the other day, he said, I mean, for us to go back to Kevin Gilbride's offense, I think is impractical at this point. I don't think they're going to change anything drastically, but I think there may be some subtle changes here. Maybe they'll look to work in some new personnel, give some young guys some additional reps. That, I think, is probably the most notable.
And he mentioned there will be subtle changes when you're the guy that makes the final decision as to what's in the game plan and what gets called and all that stuff. There will be subtle changes, but like you said, there will not be a return to the offense that Mike Sullivan probably is still more comfortable in, the offense he was kind of born and bred in here with the New York Football Giants. So, Lance, let's talk about the game a little bit. Giants and Cowboys went through an entire show yesterday. We didn't get one call about the game.
Not surprised.
It was all about the future and the draft and the coach and the GM and all that stuff. And, hey, folks, if you want to call about that again today, please call in. We're happy to talk about it, but there is a football game to play on Sunday, and everyone in this building, that's what they're focused on. They tried to move on from the cacophony of events that happened over the past couple of weeks.
Throwing out the big words here today. My goodness. Should I get a thesaurus with me for the program?
It's been a big couple of weeks. I have to bring out the vocabulary, Mr.
Caught me off guard with that one. Wow.
So, and I feel like we're being redundant, but I don't think we have a choice. What the Giants have to do to win this game is no different than what they've had to do to win games for the past 3 or 4 weeks. It doesn't matter that Eli Manning's back at quarterback because, as I said yesterday, Lance, the offense against the Raiders looked exactly like the offense against the Redskins and exactly like the offense against the Chiefs and exactly like the offense against the 49ers and exactly like the offense against the Rams. It is what it is. The quarterback was never the problem. So, can this team consistently run the football to get in third and manageable because they can't convert third and longs with their injured wide receiver core? Can the defense force a couple of takeaways and, you know, finish on the plus side of that ledger, which I think they'll have to if they want to win the game? And can the defense make enough stops? That's it. It's really that simple.
Well, I take it a step further. I mean, even if you go back to the Raiders game, John, they had favorable field position, and you would have thought, hey, this is exactly what the doctor ordered. You're shortening the field for your offense because you know this offense has struggled to put together drives of 70 and 80 yards consistently, and they still couldn't even capitalize on the short field. They turned the ball over, or, you know, they had breakdowns in terms of special teams. Those things cannot afford to come up again against even a Dallas Cowboys team that has had its fair share of struggles. And, you know, I would take it a step further, what I was alluding to, John, because I think not only do they need to force the turnovers, I would say they have to score off of those turnovers, meaning have a pick six, have a forced fumble, and then return it for a touchdown. It is no coincidence.
Or give the offense the ball inside the 20, something like that.
Gift-wrapped opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, the Giants took over, what, at the Raiders 9, John? They got it to the Raiders 4 as a result of a 5-yard penalty, a neutral zone infraction, and then they still managed to turn the ball over because Khalil Mack made a sensational play against Geno Smith. So that's why I'm saying even if they get the favorable field position, the turnovers, I don't think there's a guarantee for a score. But there is no coincidence, and I think this is what you were hitting on. In the two wins this season for the Giants, what was the one thing that was the common characteristic? They had multiple takeaways. They took the ball away from Denver three times. They were able to capitalize. They also ran the ball effectively. And then against Kansas City, they had two takeaways. They also shorted the field, and they were able to have their defense and their special teams take pressure off of the offense. It's got to be one of those games against even a Dallas Cowboys defense that, like I said, has been very erratic over the course of this season.
Yeah, no question about it, and especially in the last four games. The Cowboys offense has not gotten the job done. And we spoke about that a little bit yesterday. They scored fewer than 10 points in three straight games for, I think, might have been the first time in franchise history. Last week against the Redskins, they put up 38, but that was aided by a special teams touchdowns and a special teams touchdown by Ryan Switzer, and then multiple Redskins turnovers in own end. So the offense was helped a lot. Now, the Cowboys seem like they found their running game. And frankly, even during that three-game losing streak, they're actually running the ball at a decent yards per carry
clip. I'm glad you brought that up, yeah.
But they got better results with it last week against the Redskins, obviously. And I think that's an interesting part of the game. And can the Cowboys receivers get open? Now, they've had issues beating teams one-on-one in passing situations this year. But at the same time, the Giants' secondary is a mess. I mean, Janoris Jenkins isn't there. He's the Dez Bryant stopper. So is that going to be a bunch of big plays now? We'll see who's going to cover him. Is it going to be Cockrell? Is it going to be DRC? Who knows? And then if you take DRC out of the slot, is that going to be a field day for Cole Beasley? So those are the matchups that worry me for the Giants. Who's going to slow down Dez Bryant, who's due for an explosive game and is going to, you know, basically play really well? But can you limit him? Can you tackle him after he makes those catches? He likes to run after the catch. Can you prevent him from getting those red zone touchdowns, going over the top, things like that?
Well, and Eli Apple's banged up with multiple injuries. So if you don't have him available
and
he's been inactive, then you're right. I mean, you're really turning to guys that have just come in off the street. I mean, Brandon Dixon, I thought, had some opportunities the last game, dropped an interception, but then was able to help force a fumble. So, you know, he's still getting his feet wet. But to your point, John, yeah, Dez Bryant is probably looking at the Giants secondary saying, well, I get to avoid Janoris Jenkins. Let him throw whoever they want at me. I think I can win those one-on-one battles. And if the Cowboys are smart, I would certainly be targeting Dez Bryant, and I would be looking to get that passing game going, even though they've leaned heavily on the run. You pointed out, and I'm glad you brought this up, because I think the common narrative since Ezekiel Elliott has been suspended and the offensive line has been banged up, Tyron Smith's been out a few games, they've been moving around personnel, is, oh, here we go, the Cowboys, they can't survive without Ezekiel Elliott, they can't run the football. That's a myth. The volume in terms of total yardage has not been where it is as a team when Elliott was on the field. But Alfred Morris is averaging over 5 yards per carry. He's coming off his best performance against the Redskins, where they gave him the volume of carries to get over that century mark where he had 26. So Dallas, do not overlook this running game, even without Ezekiel Elliott. They can pound the football. The Giants have had trouble stopping the run. You've had 11 of their 12 opponents reach the century mark or even better. You got to continue to stop the run, because if they don't, then the Cowboys are really going to have a field day.
Yeah, and when you look at it, you're right. His yards per carry were great, but because they could not sustain drives, they couldn't commit to it.
Correct.
And even though the yards per carry might have been there, wasn't as effective as it was last week against Washington in terms of putting the team in good down and distance and putting Dak Prescott in good situations. And let's be honest, teams probably aren't paying as much attention to the Cowboys' running game with Alfred Morris as they did with Ezekiel Elliott. So it does change the nature of the offense and the way teams are playing them. But the other thing you got to know too, Lance, is that the Giants have had a lot of issues this year defending outside runs. And the Cowboys love running that zone stretch play outside the tackles with Alfred Morris. And with all these injuries at linebacker, that's going to be a tough thing for the Giants to stop this week.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. I mean, to contain him. Also, remember, they got Rod Smith. They move in and out of different personnel settings, and their offensive line, like I said, despite some of their ups and downs, is one of the most consistent groups. It's really interesting because the Raiders, I would argue, John, is up there with Dallas. So this is now the second straight week where the Giants' defensive front is going up against arguably the top two offensive lines in the NFL.
Well, I think they were the top two lines in the league last year.
Correct.
I think both units have fallen off a bit this year.
I would
year.
Agree. I think that's a fair assessment. But still, you've got strength, you've got veterans, sure. You've got continuity. Oh, yeah. So you certainly need to account for that. And let's be honest, you know, the Giants' pass rush has been also an up-and-down unit. You have not been able to get consistency. I think the numbers showcase that. They had that one breakout game where they had multiple sacks. As I bring up my chart here, you had the six-sack game against the Redskins. A few of them were covered sacks. But, hey, they took advantage of a banged-up Redskins offensive line. You take advantage of who's on your schedule. You can't fault them for that. However, prior to the Redskins game, you're talking about a Giants pass rush that accounted for just two sacks in the previous four games, and they only had one at the expense of the Raiders' offensive line. So outside of the Week 12 matchup with the Redskins, the Giants have managed just three sacks in the outlying five games. And that's why they're right near the bottom of the rankings in that category.
And you have to get after Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott has not thrown for more than 179 yards in four straight games. He has not played well. He's completed 60% of his passes just twice in the last two games. He's thrown five interceptions in the last three games. It has not been the same for him. He is going through a rough patch in his second year. It happens. It doesn't mean he's a bad quarterback, but he's not played well. So you want to, if you're the Giants defense, don't let this Cowboys offense take the confidence they got from the second half against the Redskins and bring it into this game. Play war early, slow them down. Now, the problem you can have with the Giants here, Lance, is that, again, there are injury issues. On the offensive line, it looks like Justin Pugh had a bit of a setback yesterday. He went for an MRI. They haven't got the results back yet on that. At least they haven't announced them. I'd be shocked if he plays in this game.
So would I.
Chad Wheeler is still coming off concussion protocol. No word on his status or practice today. If he's back or not, who knows?
And he's Pugh's replacement.
Exactly. Then you're down to Bobby Hart. We saw how DeMarcus Lawrence did against his Giants offensive line.
Oh, yeah.
The first week of the season when they were in a similar situation. David Irving has a concussion. No one's sure if he's going to play a defensive tackle for Dallas, which would be a hit for them. Looks like Sterling Shepard's going to go. Obviously, Jonathan Casillas got put on IR earlier in the week. We mentioned Eli Apple. He's probably not going to play. So there are some more injury concerns for the Giants that they're going to have to overcome as well. You mentioned the Cowboys protecting Prescott. The Giants are going to have to protect Eli Manning, something they've struggled with the last few weeks.
Yeah, DeMarcus Lawrence is having a breakout campaign. He's been fairly consistent since that impressive opening game against the New York Giants, so you need to account for him. And Dallas's defense is coming off a solid performance against the Redskins.
Might be their best performance of the year.
I mean, they've been unpredictable. You flip a coin. You don't know what Dallas defense is going to show up.
Especially without Sean Lee.
Correct.
Who might be back this week.
I think all signs are pointing to him returning,
yes.
And that was going to be my next point. He's the X factor, John, mm-hmm. because with Sean Lee on the field, they're a completely different defense. He takes pressure off of everybody else on the field. But here's the other thing. I think with Sean Lee on the field, if you say to yourself, if you're the Giants, well, you know, we're going to continue to emphasize Evan Engram. Sean Lee's a guy that they can use in coverage to try to match up with a tight end.
And Byron Jones as well. Those would be the two guys I think you'll see in Evan Engram the most.
And Engram is going to have to continue to do the heavy lifting like he did even against the Raiders. But now all of a sudden, if Sean Lee coming back contains him, who on the offensive side, in addition to Sterling Shepard, is going to fill that void? The one thing that jumped out to me in the Raiders game is, and we've talked about this at times throughout the season, there have been opportunities for the rest of the receiving core. There have been opportunities for Roger Lewis. There have been opportunities for Tarvarius King. And more often than not, I think these guys have had some mental mistakes that have come back to plague them, and they have not been able to make plays for whoever is under center, whether it be Geno Smith or Eli Manning.
And heads up, just by the way, folks, we don't have anything from Friday on the injuries, but other injuries to make note of. Orleans Darko was out with an illness yesterday. That means Wayne Gallman and Paul Perkins were taking snaps. Wayne Gallman, by the way, was also limited in practice with a hip. JPP didn't practice yesterday. It's appeared, based on media reports, he was out there today. Sterling Shepard was upgraded to limited. He was back out there again today, according to reports. Everyone else will see. B.J. Goodson was limited again. Remember, he came back with his ankle, re-injured it in the game. We'll see if he can play. And then Dallas has injuries, too. We mentioned Irving with the concussion. Lael Collins and Orlando Scandrick haven't practiced this week yet, both with back injuries. You know, back injuries, they're tricky. Who knows if they're going to be able to play. And then Tyron Smith, who missed practice on Wednesday, was back out there limited on Thursday. So I would imagine Smith and Lee are going to go. Collins didn't practice all week last week for Dallas and then played in the game.
Correct.
So I think he's probably going to try to go. You'll see how effective he can be. But I think David Irving and Orlando Scandrick are real question marks, which could affect this game a little bit.
Yeah, considering the Cowboys have a young secondary behind Orlando Scandrick.
Scandrick's
playing a lot of rookies.
He's their one veteran corner.
Yeah, so this is going to be really a matchup between two secondaries that have a lot of question marks. With the Cowboys, it's not so much health, it's more youth and inexperience. With the Giants, it's health. It's the fact that you're turning to a number of players who have not been on the team for very long, or you're turning to veterans that were number four on your depth chart, and now you're asking them, like a Ross Cockrell, to step up and be a one or a two guy.
Yeah, and the way that, and final thing on Dallas, but the way they used Byron Jones last week, he only played in passing situations, so they could be times this week for Dallas, and Giant fans should be licking their chops, where their top five DBs on the field in early downs could all be first or second year players. Jordan Lewis and Chidobe Awuzie at corner.
Yep.
Xavier Woods and Kayvon Frazier, a rookie and a second year player.
Frazier's played very well as well.
At safety. So top four guys, excuse me. So that, and you know, you have Jeff Heath in the mix too. Woods played a little bit of slot. Then Anthony Brown could be the slot corner, who's another second year player. So you're looking at five of their top seven DBs, with Jeff Heath and the Byron Jones being the exception, of all being first or second year players. So you hope the Giants wide receivers can take advantage of that.
They're going to see, though, real quickly, John, before we open up the phone lines, they're going to see the Giants, a variety of all of those players, because what Rod Marinelli did last week, and Jason Garrett pointed this out when he spoke to the media, because the press was just hammering home questions on this topic, because Byron Jones, as you mentioned, did not see a lot of playing time. His reps were cut back, because what they're doing is they're looking for so many answers on the back end of the defense that they're just rotating personnel.
Because this has been
in
bad.
And out.
Right.
Correct. So nobody, if you're a Dallas starter, if you're the veteran of the young group, you can't even guarantee how many snaps you're going to get, because it's a guessing game.
Yeah, and they tried to have Frazier in there for running situations and Jones as a cover guy. So we'll see how Dallas handles it this week. And the Giants, again, will have to try to run the football. We'll see if Orleans Darkwood can go when they play the Cowboys this week. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Let's go to the phones. Jason in Maine will lead us off. Hi, Jason.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Jason.
Right.
How are you?
Pretty good. I just got a question for you about Eli Manning.
Sure.
You guys have seen him play, I'm assuming, quite a number of years, different systems. And I'm just wondering, as you've seen him play throughout these systems, the West Coast offense, we've seen him play other different styles. What system do you think for him is the best, now that you've seen him play for a number of years? What would you say would be the best system for him?
In my opinion, I think Eli Manning, now, maybe it's not his strength anymore. We haven't seen him throw a ton of deep passes the last 4 years in the new offense. But to me, his strength is always throwing deep balls over the middle. I think he's great in play action.
Yeah.
And we talked about it when Ben McAdoo got here, that lack of mobility, not throwing on the move that well, and, you know, not being the most accurate guy in short spaces. You know, the West Coast offense maybe didn't play to a ton of Eli Manning's strengths. Now, he still played well in the system, especially the first couple years when he put up really good numbers as compared to the rest of his career. But I think he's more effective in a standard play action, down the field type of offense, and frankly, a read-based system where him and the receiver can be on the same page, and Manning can use his smarts to help him along in finding open receivers. That's my opinion.
I would agree with John. I think he's in his comfort zone when he can thrive with the deep ball. You know, having Odell Beckham in this West Coast system, I think, helped him a lot, because you dump it off to him, and then it doesn't matter if you threw the ball down the field 60 yards, because Beckham will make up for that. Correct. Notice, though, when you take Beckham out of the equation and you don't have the deep ball, you need somebody else to be able to fill the void left behind by Beckham. So I think, you know, that's something you need to take into consideration. And, you know, you brought up a good point. Aaron Rodgers and Alex Smith are two guys that stand out to me in terms of those West Coast-style offenses.
But even Donovan McNabb.
Another good one, too.
Sure.
But in terms of current quarterbacks, right, Rodgers and Smith, what do those two have in common? They're mobile.
And historically, even Joe Montana can move around.
Steve Young is another one with the Niners offense, and Bill Walsh.
I mean, you go down the list, a lot of these West Coast guys, you know, move around in the pocket. They roll them out. They bootleg them, things like that.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you guys on that. The only other thing I have, I'm just wondering, if Eli Apple can't play this weekend, there's so many weapons they have, receivers and all, what are the options they have? Can they possibly use Adams or, you know, one of their safeties to play a cornerback? Or, you know, what can their options be if Eli doesn't play?
Well, it's going to be the same options they had last week, right, Lance?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to turn to, you know, Ross Cockrell obviously is going to play a much bigger role. Brandon Dixon, I mentioned, who, let's face it, he got a lot of reps
in the last game, too. Starter last week,
yeah,
let's be honest.
So, I mean, he's going to be very much in the mix. I think throwing in some of the additional safeties is certainly a possibility. I think, though, and if you ask DRC from what he's talked to the media.
You got Daryl Morris, too, by the way, another player that was active last week.
Another new face. Yes. But I think that DRC, for the most part, would probably stay inside. You know, you don't see them moving him too much outside. And the reason why I bring that up is because everybody's saying, oh, well, if Dez Bryant is on the outside and DRC is your most experienced corner, wouldn't you move him on to play Dez and then focus on everybody else? But you know, you have to take into consideration, Cole Beasley's a guy that can easily move the chains, so you still need to account for him. And Terrence Williams, while his numbers haven't been nearly as consistent as some of the other receivers, you know, he makes two or three big catches, and all of a sudden the Cowboys are down the field. So I don't think they're going to move DRC to the outside to just shadow Dez in this game.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate the call. We lost Dave from Rochester. I was going to go to him next. He was holding. He was a little excited.
I haven't heard from Dave in Rochester.
That's why
quite
I was excited
time.
To take Dave, and then he hung up.
Well, hopefully
I guess
Dave is still listening.
Didn't want to
call
patient.
Back. Impatient. I mean, geez.
All right.
I got to get to him second.
I think I got time for one more call before I have to go and run and do SPAG.
So you're going to miss Dave regardless then,
I'm not going to miss Len from Maryland, who's up next.
Fair
Hi,
enough.
Len.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Well, it's Cowboys week at home. Always a little bit of buzz, and should be more this week with everything that took place. But there will be a lot of Cowboys fans there on Sunday. A lot of folks sold their tickets, unfortunately, and I'm sure there weren't other Giants fans buying them. I'm sure they were Cowboys fans. So
sure,
I think
you're
we'll
probably
see,
right.
Even a larger number of Cowboy fans than usual, and. You know, a little buzz to the game. The only thing worse, John, than having your fans angry at you, your best customers angry at you coming down the escalators, is having your best customers angry at you going up the escalators. And I think they took care of that,
actually.
You know, with the changes during the week.
Mm-hmm.
Geez, if Sean Lee plays 20 tackles, what do you think?
Oh, he's good for
it's
that.
It's funny. I actually had a joke yesterday. I asked Carl Banks the over-under on Sean Lee tackles. I think we put it at 14.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. You know, empty the playbook. Go to the last few pages. Grab some plays off those. You know,
they already did that against San Fran.
Yeah.
The Chiefs,
well,
rather.
I think that's one of the things. Let's make this as entertaining as possible. But with all the injuries and all the guys that are injured who are going to play, going to gut it out and go out there and try to play, it's really going to be a tough one. But, hey, with Eli playing, you always have a chance, right, guys?
Well, that's
Absolutely.
Your line, Len. You don't need to convince us.
Right,
that's
right.
Your money line.
Listen, pass rush, just one more thing. I know you want to get to the guest. I mean, what in the world is going on? We can't get anything out of those defensive ends.
Well, in fairness, Len, you did have six sacks against Washington. I agree. It didn't feel like a game where you had six sacks. I agree with you on that. But you did get pressure in that game. But overall, you're right. Over the course of the year, you have not gotten the type of pass pressure you need, which I think has forced Spags into blitzing, which has then opened up things down the field of the banged-up secondary, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, there might be, you know, maybe there's injuries there, too. Well, we know Olivia Vernon's a little beat up.
Correct. He hasn't been 100%.
You know, JPP, you know, he's got some problems, too. But, geez, it just seems like it's non-existent. I'll tell you, I'd slide Kennard down in there. In passing downs, slide Kennard down there. Kennard seems to, you know, God bless him, the guy seems to get pressure every time he rushes the passer. And, man, I wouldn't be afraid to stick him in. We've got to get some kind of rush on Prescott. I can just see the first play from scrimmage. I'm envisioning it already. You know, Prescott rolling out. JPP dives inside. Prescott sitting by himself on the outside for a 20-yard gain down the field. You know, maintain your lane. Lane integrity. Gap
well, that comes
integrity.
Down to discipline. That's what it comes down
to,
right?
I mean, you know, especially against this zone blocking. They're committed to it. They love it. They do it very well, probably mostly because they got great players, but that's what they're going to do. And, you know, the key in that kind of scheme, I always thought, is gap integrity, lane integrity. If you start cheating and try to make the big play on your own man, you're going to get burned. He's just going to get burned.
Well, and that goes back to your point, Len, because you mentioned about this is a game where you want to dig deep and open up the playbook. But the problem is if you give them too much free rein and you get too creative, then guys go out of their lanes, to your point, and stop worrying about discipline and just worrying about going above the X's and O's, and that's how it leads to big plays and breakdowns. So you sort of have to find the fine line between both.
Right, right. All right, one more thing. I just hope there's enough emotion left. The last 2 weeks have been draining, and I'm sure it's been draining in that locker room. A lot of things going on, a lot of things being said, and you know, hopefully it doesn't affect our energy level when we get out on the field. Maybe that initial burst with Eli back in there and the crowd back into it, and, you know, you got a new coach, you know, egging him on and so forth. But there's been a lot going on. These guys could be sapped.
Well,
and,
listen, Len, I think
maybe another game or two between, you know, before Spags' influence really takes hold. You got any comment on that?
Well, I think that's an interesting point you bring up in terms of whether or not stuff that happened around the team is going to impact their play on the field. Listen, I can only speak from talking with players and just using my own eye test, Len. I think sometimes that's a convenient media narrative. And the reason I say that is, you know, I'm not saying I've been a professional athlete. I've played sports. I'm sure you've played sports. Everybody can relate. When you play sports, I think, you know, you put the lens on and you're in the zone and you get distracted. And I don't think you're really thinking about everything that happened on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So while Len, I think it's convenient to bring that up, and I can understand it's a fair concern and it's part of the dialogue leading up to the game. I think when you put the helmet on and those guys get on the field, I don't think they're worrying about two people being let go from the organization a few days earlier. I just don't think it's relevant.
Well, I'm going in 15 minutes earlier than usual on Sunday, guys. I'm going to try to soak it all in. Let's go, Giants. Let's win a football game.
All right,
thanks for taking
a
call.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Lance Meadow with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're looking ahead to the Giants-Cowboys game on Sunday, delving into whatever other topics you want to hit on as well. Let's go to Brandon in Jersey. Brandon, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, man?
I'm doing well. Brandon, what do you got for us?
All right. I called in a couple of days ago, and I was talking about the coaching staff, and Dale was telling me that Gruden was a bad idea because he never developed any quarterbacks. Now, I called back to tell him this. I had a couple of more coaches in mind before I'm going to touch on the Gruden situation. I like Raheem Moore. I believe he's a possible. We should look at him. I think we should look at Keith Butler and and I like the John Gruden, because Gruden could probably bring in Callahan as the offensive coordinator. And like they was just saying, we probably need Eli in the system where he's more throwing the ball down the field and play action.
You're talking about – are you referring to Bill Callahan? Is that who you're referring to?
Yeah.
So you're referring to the Redskins, offensive line coach is what you're saying, is an offensive coordinator?
I believe he could be an offensive coordinator. I believe he done it before in his past.
He's been, when he was with the Oakland Raiders, he has an offensive background. I mean, I think he's done a really good job as an offensive line coach with the Cowboys and the Redskins over the last few years. So, you know, he certainly has an offensive background that he knows how to build and teach an offensive line that has had a lot of movable parts, especially in Washington this year with all the injuries that he's had to shuffle through. I mean, he's done a hell of a job under those circumstances.
And what you think about Raheem Moore?
Well, Moore is a defensive-minded coach, so that's his background. And I think that when the Giants sit down and they start to think about their candidates, what they need to determine is they need to determine two things, and I've said this on multiple occasions. First, they need to determine whether or not they want to have an offensive or a defensive-minded coach. The trend in this league, as you well know, is going in the direction of offensive-minded guys, Brandon. A lot of teams, correct.
This is the one thing I would say. I don't count out Spags because
I would not.
When he's the head coach, he always had a good offensive coordinator. He had Josh McDaniels and he had Pat Shurmur. So I believe he could go out and find an offensive coordinator that could fit Eli. And I believe he will go into next season with Eli as the starter and Webb as the backup, and we'll trade out of that top pick and build and get more picks and get more pieces on the team for next year. I believe that's what any GM and coach that Kmet needs to do. They need to get out of that pick and build around this team and get more picks.
Well, I've said there's value. If you get a top three pick and you move down, you can address a variety of different issues. I think there's value to that. I think the only way that, you know, they're not going to want to give that up is if they are enamored by perhaps one of the quarterbacks who is going to come out in the draft. That's how the equation gets changed, and we're not going to know that until we get to the combine, until the college football season plays out, and the direction of the new GM that ultimately comes in. But getting back to your point.
And if Spass could find a good offensive coordinator, which I believe he could because he's done it in the past, he might just be the guy because he already – we might not need one to check out of that defense because it just played well last year, you know what I mean? So the defense ain't completely broke. We just get a couple more guys back.
They've got to get back to full health. That's number one. And appreciate the phone call, Brandon. What they also need to do is – the players that produced at a consistent level in 2016 need to return to that part as well. You know, Landon Collins got off to a slow start. Part of it was he was dealing with injuries. You know, Janoris Jenkins had his fair share of ups and downs. Now, like I said, a lot of these guys weren't necessarily 100%, but, you know, despite the injuries that they were dealing with in 16, still got out there and you had that consistency factor. So it's not so much getting everybody back on the field. It's also getting everybody to perform at that same level game in and game out. But I want to get back to the point that the last caller brought up in terms of the philosophy of whoever the new head coach is. I agree that even if you go in a defensive direction for your head coach, that doesn't mean that the identity of the team is going to be defense. Case in point, Sean McVay was hired as the Rams head coach. So he continues that trend of offensive-minded coaches. They went with a young guy, and it's paid off very well. He's done a great job running that offense. He's done a great job developing Jared Goff. But what he did was, and this is what I think is overlooked in terms of the Rams staff, he brought in Wade Phillips as his defensive coordinator. Wade Phillips had previous head coaching experience and has also been a solid defensive coordinator at his various stops. He was with the Texans. They were a top unit. He was with the Denver Broncos when they won a Super Bowl. They were a top unit. So what Sean McVay said to himself is, listen, I'm a young guy. My focus is offense. What better way to operate and have my team run than bring in a guy who can go out on his own island? He can run the defense. He doesn't need somebody to hover over him. So if you do go in that direction of an offensive-minded guy, he brings in a defensive coordinator that has that previous head coaching experience or has that good track record. You know, that could balance out the coaching staff. Same thing vice versa. If you bring in a defensive-minded guy and he turns to an offensive coordinator who has had previous head coaching experience. I'm just throwing out a name here. I'm not saying that he's even in the conversation, but like a Norv Turner. Norv Turner, great offensive coordinator, has previous head coaching experience. Somebody under that umbrella, under that resume, that would make sense so that you have a strong assistant who is like an associate head coach, and you see a lot of teams doing that. So I don't think that an offensive hiring has to be the number one priority. It depends on what that head coach is going to do to round out the staff. And the Sean McVay example I bring up because I think he did a nice job rounding out his staff with polished veterans that he didn't have to worry about, boy, I've got to give them direction on a daily basis. He knows you put Wade Phillips in the defensive room, Wade Phillips knows how to run a defense. He knows how to run a team. And that gives then a young head coach a great deal of flexibility. You need that. You need that in all levels of your coaching staff. Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, Lance.
How are we doing, Charlie?
Good. What did John find out? I was online, so he took off.
Well, he got a head start. I would have rather switched positions with him, and I should have been the guy out of this room, and he should be here talking to you.
Hey, I got a hypothetical for you. What happens?
Wonderful. It's always dangerous, but we'll listen.
What happens if Staggs wins the next four games and the Giants win the next four games and Eli really plays really well? And do you think he'd have a chance to be the head coach going forward?
Well, I think he's going to get consideration regardless of how these games play out. I mean, clearly, if they do win, they're competitive. I think that bodes very well because maybe it shows the organization that the team is rallying around him. You know, Spags has previous head coaching experience, so that would also be one of the other reasons why I would at least take him into consideration regardless of how this season ends. But I don't know if, even if they play very strong down the stretch, that he becomes the front runner. And I'm not saying that you mentioned that, Charlie. I wouldn't go so far. But I do agree that, yes, I think he's going to get consideration. And I think it does help his cause if the team does respond down the stretch here in the final four games.
And the other thing I have is now that we have McAdoo gone, who didn't believe in chip blocking or bringing in another offensive lineman to help, say, on Lawrence, that maybe because his chip blocking was basically just throw the ball out quicker. So hopefully Sullivan will realize that Lawrence, we're going to need two guys on him, because if Bobby Hart is playing or, you know, Eric Flowers is playing, or whichever side he's on, they're going to need help. You know, so hopefully they will actually put a tight end in there to have two guys on one, and that will help slow down Lawrence a bit, or bring in another offensive lineman. So I want to see if that changes and they actually will help one of their weak tackles, because whichever one is having the worst game, they should definitely help that person out, help them out. So I'm hoping that, you know, this non-chip blocking and not helping out our tackles is gone with McAdoo. So if not, Eli's going to have a long day, you know, running around or trying to run around.
Well, of course. And listen, that was even the issue for Geno Smith. Geno Smith was sacked twice in the last game, and even with his mobility, I think Geno did a nice job extending plays, but you saw that he was facing similar situations that Eli Manning had to deal with, regardless of the fact that he can utilize his legs.
Yeah, and well, the reason why is they didn't chip block. They didn't use anybody to help the tackles out. And that's why I'm saying I'm hoping that now Sullivan's in charge, that he will actually help the tackles out, realizing they are our weakness on our team. So it's going to be interesting to see if that changes, which I hope it does. I think we got a good shot of winning this game. I think Eli is going to play at a real high level. And if they can just give him a little time, and if we can run the ball a little bit, I think we have a good shot at winning this game. So
well,
it's going to be really fun to watch the Giant Stadium go crazy when Eli comes out, and hopefully we'll see what happens. But it's going to be interesting.
All right, Charlie. Well, listen, before I let you go, by the way, on another subject, did we settle the lobster issue with Jeff Eagles yet? Because I think I've been behind on that narrative.
I'm waiting for Jeff to let me know.
You're waiting.
Let me know real soon.
Oh, boy, you've got all the excuses in the book, Charlie. It's amazing.
This is what I'm going to do.
I'm going to talk to Jeff, okay?
Yeah, you should.
And I'm going to make sure that we could get this settled, because my fear is the season's going to play out, then the offseason, we're going to get caught up in the GM and the coaching search, and you're just going to fade away into the sunset
nothing ever transpired. He's waiting for all three of you to be there at the same day because he wants to show the lobsters on air. So
well, listen,
I'm just waiting, you can still let me know.
But here's the thing. You can still deliver them, and then we can then coordinate once they are on site. Listen, we got a great kitchen staff here.
They're live, Lance. They can't stay for a long period of time. If they die, you cannot eat them. So that's the reason.
Well, yeah, I don't want any bad lobsters. So maybe we will have to reconsider that game plan. I will coordinate with Jeff, but you're not getting off the hook so quickly, Charlie. I'm just making sure that we don't forget about this. And appreciate the phone call, Charlie. We will certainly talk down the road. Last comment that Charlie made was about the running game. And what's interesting is the Giants, to me, and we brought this up on multiple shows, prior to the Raiders game, they had been turning the corner in terms of the running attack. And I think what hurt the offense this past week is they just were not able to establish the run. And that brought even more problems in addition to the pass protection. Last week against the Raiders, 24 carries, 65 yards, just 2.7 yards per carry. You go back to the previous few games, and we'll take this back to week 5 against the Chargers, I think is even fair to go back. 152, over 6 yards per carry. Week 6 against the Broncos, 148, 4.6 yards per carry. Setback against the Seahawks, they only ran for 46 yards, 2.7 per carry. Then they regrouped, 111 against the Rams, over 4 yards per carry. 114 against the Niners, 5 yards per carry. They had 112 against the Chiefs, 3.5 yards per carry. And then 84 against the Redskins, 3.5 per carry. Results a little bit up and down, but you gained some consistency on the ground where they had run for over 100 yards in 5 games in a 6-game stretch. Now the last two, 84 and 65 respectively, they got to get back to the ground attack. Dallas's defense, they get Sean Lee back. It's not going to be easy because Sean Lee, and we talked about this earlier, he is an absolute tackling machine. He can fill voids where you don't think he has any chance. So that's why I think he's going to be such an X factor in this game. Can the Giants contain him? Can the Giants prevent him from becoming a disruptive player in terms of getting to the quarterback, stopping the run, and also dropping back in coverage, because you got to worry about him and you have to worry about DeMarcus Lawrence. Those are the two players this season that can take the Cowboys' defense so far. When those two players are on, it's trouble for the opposition. When either of them are not in the lineup or struggling, to me, Dallas is a completely different defense, and that's why I think it's fair to label them Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. It's all based on what those two players bring to the table. Let's head back to the phone lines. Lance Meadow with you here. Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, 201-939-4513. Steve is in South Carolina. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, Lance? Two questions, one about the draft and one about Spags. What do you think is more important? Is playing into our strength or fortifying our strength in the defense in the draft, or is it trying to fill holes in our weaknesses on the offense?
I think it's more important to fortify those holes and try to patch them up with multiple players if you can address that, especially through a trade if you can move down. Because if you look at the nucleus of this defense, Steve, while I would agree that depth is always a concern and you always want to be able to retool, the nucleus is still under contract for next season. So it's not as if you have to say to yourself, boy, we've got to go out and find a group of pass rushers, when you know Vernon and JPP are still on the books. Janoris Jenkins is still on the books. You drafted Eli Apple, so he's still under his rookie contract. I mean, the point is, the guys that you want to build around are still going to be here. So you need to obviously complement them, and you could do that through free agency. I don't know if you have to go for the home run in the draft. With respect to the offense, depending on the uncertainty at the quarterback position, with respect to two free agents on the offensive line in Justin Pugh and Weston Richburg, Brandon Marshall, is he going to remain on the team? I think there's more heavy lifting that has to be done on offense. If you put both of them up on a chart, I think it makes more sense to address the offense on multiple fronts in the draft.
I mean, you don't see us going to get, say, the best hybrid linebacker at our first overall pick, and then using free agency to pick up maybe like a 1,000-yard rusher, refortifying a DJ Fluker, build up the right side of the line, and just get back to a team that plays defense and runs the ball.
Well, as far as the linebacker position is concerned, you opened the door for me to throw out my favorite line, Steve, and I know I sound like a broken record, but you opened the door, I'm going to take advantage. I mean, the Giants have not drafted a linebacker in the first round since Carl Banks in 1984.
Right.
So I understand everybody every season calls for a linebacker, but you also need to take into consideration the track record of the organization. Now, with that being said, who knows? Maybe the new GM that comes in has a different philosophy and finds that linebacker is a position he wants to focus in on. But until I see that, I'm a little bit leery that that's going to be the direction that they're going to go in. And it all depends on if there is a defensive prospect that emerges between now and the combine and the draft that warrants, let's say, a top three pick. If there's not somebody there, then my argument is, Steve, why would you go and stretch to address that position if it doesn't warrant a top three pick? So you have to take that into consideration. I agree with all of the positions that you talked about in terms of the offense. I mean, it makes sense. But if you move down, I think you can address all of those positions because you would have stockpiled multiple picks.
Yeah, and, you know, I just feel like, you know, Eli and the Giants have had most success when they've had a good run game. I mean, we had Earth, Wind, and Fire, that's pretty much unstoppable. You know, if we go get – we've got two good running backs already. If we go get a proven guy that's a 1,000-yard rusher, someone like Alfred Morris or something like along that line, you know, and plug him in there. And I think I see more success with that. So I'll get on to the question about Spags. You think he's at a disadvantage because the organization kind of got burned this past time from hiring within?
I think it's tough for any interim coach who takes over at any point because you're really in the crossroads. You want to do a good job down the stretch, and I'm sure at the same time, I know Spags didn't necessarily admit this in his presser, but I think considering how things ended with the Rams, I can understand if Spags is anxious to get another opportunity, and you just don't know when that opportunity is going to come about. So, you know, it's a tough spot no matter how you look at it for him because, you know, he's also thrown into a situation that came out of the blue. And also, remember, Spags was under consideration to become the head coach when Ben McAdoo ultimately got the job. So when you take all of that into consideration, Steve, I think there's an awkwardness. And I'm just speaking from my personal opinion. I haven't necessarily had a conversation with Spags where he's voiced this. I'm just talking about my interpretation. So that awkward feeling because you're replacing a guy that you work closely with that kept you on as the DC after you were competing with him for the ultimate job. you clearly want another shot because of how things ended with the Rams, and you're also trying to salvage the remainder of the season. So, I mean, I think disadvantage may be a suitable term. I just think it's a very tough spot, and anybody who's ever thrown
And I love Spags to death, but unfortunately, you know, he's been part of a coaching staff that has lost two head coaches in the last 3 years. You know, so I mean I would hate to see him go, but I could also see somebody coming and cleaning house, you know.
I can certainly see that. I think you bring up a fair point. You bring up a fair point that since they've turned over the old regime between Coughlin, Reese, and Ben McAdoo, and I know McAdoo wasn't necessarily here as long, you wonder if the best way to go is bring in somebody completely unrelated to the organization. But on the flip side, given the history and the track record of the Giants, it would also not surprise me if somebody is brought in, whether it be a GM or a head coach, that has past ties to the Giants organization, meaning may not be a part of the current staff, but may have been here as an assistant previously, if you know what I'm saying. So, you know that would not surprise me.
Do you know if Matt Patricia at all has a locked-up contract?
I don't know what his situation is with the Patriots as a defensive coordinator, but it really doesn't matter, Steve, and appreciate the phone call about his contract, because in the NFL, if you have an opportunity to move up the ladder, meaning a move from a DC spot to a head coach spot is an upgrade, you don't have to worry about your contract because teams can't necessarily block you from moving up. You can't go from D.C. on one team to a D.C. on another team. A team can block you from doing that because that is a lateral movement. But if you go from D.C. to head coach, that's an upgrade. So you don't have to necessarily take into consideration the contractual situation with respect to that. And any other candidate, as I move back over here, we play the game of musical chairs. It looks like John Schmelk has cooperated with his schedule. I should say Steve Spagnuolo has cooperated with his schedule to allow John to return for the closing portion of the program.
The Spagnuolo interview is done. I poked my head in the locker room. There weren't many players talking, so I figured my skills will be better served here with Lance Meadow. One's more disappointed than Lance Meadow.
Yeah, I am.
That he is to share the microphone with somebody.
You know me well, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, well said. So we were talking about Steve Spagnuolo, the last caller, bringing up an interesting question, whether or not, and I think this relates to any interim coach, John, but I'm curious your perspective, somewhat of a disadvantage given the fact that he was on the previous coaching staff. He's also served under Tom Coughlin, and you think that maybe he's looking for redemption for how his stint with the Rams ended, so maybe he wants to be in the mix, but he's also trying to salvage a very difficult season under the circumstances.
I think his only thought right now is win a game, get this team together, manage what's a difficult transition, and figure out how to win one football game. I think that's all he's worried about, and if that works and happens, then everything else will take care of itself, because it's a fire drill type of week, but you have to make it seem like it's an orderly, run-of-the-mill type of week, which is a real big challenge, I think, because it is a change for the players. It's a change for everybody involved, but you have to make it seem like a normal work week, and I think that's the real challenge here.
Well, and that's why I think he's doing the best he can to make some subtle changes without rocking the boat.
Like the schedule.
That's an example of you don't want to come in and be like the Tasmanian devil and just run through everything and say, okay, now I'm running the ship, so now we have to tweak and we have to change everything. So I think he's trying to handle this as best as possible. And it'll be very interesting to see how the players respond, because in these circumstances, I think you could see players say to themselves, well, hey, the writing's on the wall. They made changes. I don't know necessarily, you know, how they're viewing the final four games. On the flip side, you know, a lot of players could now say to themselves, hey, this is a sign that if the coach and the GM could go, easily a player can go, and they can make changes to the roster. So maybe it's a wake-up call that they now say, hey, you know what? We may be mathematically out of it, but there's no reason why we can't go out there, play hard, put good film, put some substance on tape so that if they are a free agent or they're looking to stay with the team, it bodes well for them. So, I mean, I still think this is a good opportunity for the players. And everybody loves to throw out the tanking term, which I get tired of hearing, John. And the reason I get tired of hearing this is because no player on this roster right now, especially since it's such a youth movement, is in the luxury or in the position to just say, you know what, these four games are meaningless.
People never understand tanking. Players don't tank.
Yeah.
Coaches don't tank. Front offices tank. And they don't tank by telling their head coach not to try to win or not to play hard. they tank by making the roster so poor, even though the roster's playing as hard as they can, they're incapable of winning games. That's how teams tank. That's how the Sixers were so bad. They stripped that roster of, in the NBA, of course, the 76ers from Philadelphia, they stripped that roster of any useful player and basically played with undrafted free agents for a season or two for the sole purpose of getting the highest pick possible and getting franchise future cornerstones. No team in the history of the league has told their players not to play hard and try to win, have told their coaches not to coach hard and try to win. That doesn't happen. Even when you go back to the Spurs, it was a front office decision not to bring David Robinson back from an injury for the final 10 or 15 games when he could have played because they wanted Tim Duncan. That's an organizational decision. That's not telling the guys that are out there not to try. People don't seem to get that, but that's how tanking works.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giant Chat. We'll try to get to a few of your tweets along the way. Right now, though, let's head back to the phone lines. Richie is on Long Island. Richie, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Nice to talk to you again.
Hey, Rich.
What do you got for us, Richie?
Hey, Smoke. I haven't talked to you since the summer. I just want to say congratulations on being a father.
Oh, I appreciate that. Everything is going well. She's sleeping, and I have no complaints. She's wonderful. I love it. I appreciate that,
Very
Richie.
Good.
Thank you.
Very good. It was great to hear, man. It's a blessing in disguise.
No disguise, just baby. Just a blessing.
Just a blessing.
That's what he says, of course. But anyway.
Just wanted to talk a little bit about JPP. I don't know. Does it seem to me that in games I know there's maybe doesn't have this, you know, the sacks, you know, doesn't have the eye popping numbers, but does it seem like he kind of goes, you know, like you wouldn't even notice if he was there? You know, certain games maybe he just seems like just goes quiet, you know, that he doesn't make too much of a disruption.
Yeah, I think, Richie, I think that's fair. I think at times there haven't been the number of impact plays you would like to see from him. And I think more disturbing to me is that the run defense on the perimeter to his side has been problematic. Now, I'm not going to put that all on him because that's a linebacker issue, that's a cornerback issue, and it's not just on one player. But, yeah, I think overall his impact has not been what you have liked it to be this year, you know, having another full season back off of that hand issue.
Yeah, because it seemed even that way last season as well. You know, certain games that he had the same issue. And then, you know, he would come in, I think it was the Cleveland game and maybe the Chicago game where he really made an impact. But other than that, there were other games where it just seemed that he, you know, his didn't have too much impact.
Well, the one thing I'll add to that, Richie, and then we'll let you continue. Remember, when Vernon got hurt, I think that impacted JPP, and I'm not trying to make an excuse here because they moved JPP around as a result, and you could argue, you know, JPP much more effective when he's playing opposite Vernon because of the attention, whereas now he has to fill Vernon's spot, and then he's playing opposite guys that are a little bit more inexperienced. Think about how the offense is going to attack JPP. They're worried about him much more so than the guys playing opposite him.
Yeah, it definitely, because it made a difference, you're right. Well, when Olivier Vernon was in there, that he came in. But now with all the injuries, I just had a quick question. Is Goodson, is Goodson on the injury report?
Goodson
yes,
was
he
on
is,
the
he is
yeah.
limited in practice. Again, I don't think we have an official word on what happened today quite yet, but he was limited in practice on Wednesday and Thursday. I imagine he'll be limited again today.
Okay. Yeah, I really want to see him, you know, stay healthy for the next four games. Right now it seems as though, I hope I'm wrong in this, but it seems as though he's going towards the Jonathan Goff route, you know, where he's very good run stuffer, you know, but just couldn't stay healthy. I hope he breaks that trend because Lord knows we need a linebacker for next season.
No argument.
Durability is a big part of playing that position, Richie, and appreciate the phone call. I mean, he brought up Goff. I didn't think he was going to go there. I mean, you know, John Beeson, I know he came a little bit later on in his career, but you know, the Giants have had some playmakers there, but if you can't stay on the field, it's hard. Now, Goodson's still young. He actually, speaking of the Cowboys, John, had a great debut. I mean, that was his statement game. And then, you know, even Spags said, you had Goodson coming off that game, and then all of a sudden he gets hurt, and now they had to juggle around middle linebackers. So it made it for a quite challenging aspect of the defense this season.
Yeah, linebacker is a physical position. Staying healthy is a big part of that. Can you absorb all that contact? And look, he's a violent, physical player. He's going to lay big hits on people. He's going to mix it up with running backs and linemen and all that stuff. And you have to be able to survive that contact to play another day. And so far, you hope it's a one-year blip. But that's something he's going to have to figure out a way to overcome.
George is in Florida. George, what's happening?
Hey, guys. It's nice to talk to you guys again.
Thanks for calling.
First time, Don, that I'm talking to you. Appreciate the show.
Thank you, George.
Really enjoy the show.
Well, appreciate that. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for making the phone call. So what do you have for us?
I called in April and probably was a little rude in saying it was offensive line stupid, if you remember. And I didn't mean to be that drastic, but kind of looking back at the turning point of the season, it really did kind of make me wonder if the stubbornness of not making the move for, say, moving him to the right side and moving Flowers to the right side was probably some of the impetus for the firings this last week. And nobody wants somebody to lose their job, but it seemed like there was some kind of stubbornness there. I know that you guys mentioned there weren't any offensive linemen moving into the year, but
not many.
You kind of look around the league and you can see that there were some plug and play players.
There were three. There were three players that could have helped the Giants this year on the offensive line. One in the draft, in Ryan Ramczyk.
Right.
Because the other player was selected by the Broncos ahead of the Giants. I forgot.
Garrett Bowles.
Garrett Bowles from Utah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right.
And the two free agents that you could have brought in to help were Andre Whitworth and Riley Reiff.
Yeah.
Those are the two offensive linemen at tackle at free agency that were really going to help you. Unfortunately, the two free agents made so much money, it would be very difficult to carry those guys on your cap along with all the guys you signed last offseason, plus the future expenditures for Pugh, Richburg, Landon Collins, Odell Beckham Jr., and then Ryan Ramczyk in the draft. Remember, he was coming off a very serious hip injury, so there was some projection there and a risk. And remember, he's also playing right tackle for the Saints. He's not playing left tackle. So in that situation, I'm not even sure you can move him over. I know people say, oh, how about Cam Robinson? If you look at Pro Football Focus's gradings, I know people want to take that with a grain of salt. That's fine. But I'm not sitting here breaking down Cam Robinson's technique at left tackle for the Jaguars, okay? They have him ranked, I believe, as the third worst left tackle in football, okay?
Yeah.
So don't act like if you would have signed him, he would have came in and solved all your problems, because he wouldn't have.
Well, I think there's a couple of things that you have to kind of look at. The last couple of years, there were some opportunities to take a left tackle, and we went in a different direction.
That's fair. That's fair.
The other thing moving forward, though, and this is kind of, you know, interesting, because up until a couple of weeks ago, I was favoring that Mac at least would be back. And the reason being is that you want some continuity with Eli moving forward until they started to make the change to Geno. Now that's happened, that it's back to Eli moving forward, do you see a change to right tackle for Flowers moving forward?
I don't think that's the panacea that everyone makes it out to be. I mean, would you rather have – let me ask you something. Would you rather have Flowers, the left tackle this week, trying to block Crawford, or would you rather have him at right tackle this week trying to block DeMarcus Lawrence?
Well, for short term, I think you have to stay the course. But moving into 2018, and I kind of have already moved to 2018, I'm really hoping that we can beat Dallas, because I've been a Giant fan since 64. So, obviously, they, to me, are not America's team. I'm hoping that you could get to that point where there would be at least some kind of planning for 2018, that there would be some changes moving forward.
I wouldn't be surprised if they tried Eric Flowers on the other side of the line. But I think the point that Lance and I make all the time is that you have just as many high-quality pass rushers that line up over right tackle as you do over left tackle now. If not more.
Yeah, they're going to find you.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to find you. Look, Von Miller, Khalil Mack, and DeMarcus Lawrence all line up over the left side. So does at left end over the right tackle. So does Justin Houston.
Ryan Kerrigan moves around.
Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram both move around, too, for San Diego. So even if you put him on the right side, it doesn't mean he's automatically going to be a much better player. He's never played on the right side before. It's actually a tougher adjustment for him to move over
You can't hide an offense. Of linemen, George. That's our point. And I understand a lot of people are thinking that, you know, if you move him to the right, you find a new left tackle, that's going to solve all the issues. And listen, if a new coaching staff comes in, that may be their prerogative.
And who knows? Maybe they'll move him to guard, and that changes the equation completely.
Exactly.
He could be an excellent guard for all we know. Who knows?
All of that is going to depend on whoever ultimately is running this coaching staff. But I think in the short term right now, especially given the injury bug and the fact that Justin Pugh and Chad Wheeler are banged up, I don't think this is the time to experiment because there's no other left tackle on the roster right now. Eric Flowers has to stay there. Yeah,
I definitely concur for this year, but I'm thinking more long term. Plus, I'm very impressed with some of the younger guys. So,
in particular? Just out of curiosity, George, which young guys have you been impressed with?
Well, I like Jones. Obviously,
well, Brett Jones is not going to play tackle, though. In fairness,
he's a center, right?
He's a center and a guard.
I'm saying overall for the line.
Overall for the line, okay.
Next year.
All right, no, Brett Jones, I agree with you. He's certainly been a bright spot, and he's needed to because Richburg is on IR.
I think given time, Wheeler will do pretty well.
We'll see.
We'll see, yeah. I mean, it's a small sample size.
I don't think we have enough evidence to make a judgment either way at this point.
I think
the only thing that and maybe other fans would chime in, I think if we had seen some movement this year, or at least even if it wasn't perfect, I don't think anybody expected the line to be perfect this year. But it was really the same situation as last year.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that, I think, moving into 2017, that was my biggest concern. And so, not to be rote in the way I express something, but it really is something that I'm going to be looking for, even for 2018.
And that's understandable, George. And listen, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
We agree with you, by the way. The offensive, I think you kind of phrased it. Do you think the guys got fired because they didn't find a different position for Eric Flowers? I think if you would have phrased it, these guys maybe in part lost their jobs because the offensive line didn't show any real improvement from last year to this year overall, and that, again, as a small part of it, and John Mara made the point during the press conference,
he
the
did.
Offensive line was not the reason why he made the moves that he did, but in the picture of the overall offense, even when Odell Beckham Jr. was on the field, Lance, in the first four games this year, there were no signs of improvement for the offense from last year to this year. It was the same. It looked like the same offense. And then as a team in whole, obviously the defense took a step back and, you know, firestorm and everything went to hell. But, you know, I think it's part of the larger issue that caused the changes to be made.
I agree with you, but you hit it right on the nose in terms of bringing up the defense, because what John Mara did bring up during his press conference, he goes, listen, this is the same offensive line that we had on a roster where we went 11-5. I'm paraphrasing it, but that was his point, right?
Yep.
However, you had injuries, the guys didn't stay healthy. That's one way to look at it in terms of maybe why the offensive line didn't show improvement. Continuity's big. With that being said, though, John, I think with the way the defense performed last season, you're able to cover up some of your shortcomings on offense, right?
Absolutely.
So now what happens this season? The defense doesn't play to the same level in 16. Now you start to really bring to the forefront some of those offensive issues, and you have no other facet to cover that up. And that's what I think was really front and center this season.
I
want to get to just one interesting tweet before
Please.
We wrap up, and this is more of a projection for next year. Vic writes at NFL NYG 43, my wish next year is to mirror the Dallas Cowboys. It pains me to say this. We need the triplets. He's going real back into the archives of the 1990 Cowboys. Beckham, Evan Ingram, and a great running back. Let's draft the Penn State kid and fill in two bodies on the offensive line. It worked and is working for the boys. Well, you know, keep in mind, the Cowboys, those 90 Cowboys, the offensive line was really the heavy lifter on that team. And they put those guys together over a period of time.
Well,
while
they
did have the skill positions, the line, though, made or broke that team.
Well, I remember that was a pre-salary cap team.
Correct.
They
put that's a fair point.
And they put that team together pre-salary cap.
Big X factor there.
Why do you think that team fell apart after 1995?
Well, because all of a sudden the cap comes.
Everyone kept signing everybody off the roster. So they lost all their players.
Can't keep Leon Ladd and all those other guys.
Yeah, I mean, all these guys got signed away.
That's a fair point.
And that's what happened to the salary cap. That's why I don't think since those 90s Cowboys you've had, like, except for the Patriots, obviously, in, you know, 2000, the dynasty and their 2017, which still is, to me, the best team that I've ever seen of the salary cap era that the Giants beat in 2007.
Oh, you mean teams consistently winning? And
yeah,
saying,
just,
oh, God,
I missed
your point.
Even dominant teams. You haven't really seen teams dominate the league year in, year out with the talent level that we saw 90s Cowboys in before then. 80s Niners, 70s Steelers, because now the salary cap spreads the talent around, which I think is a good thing. That's why fans like the NFL so much. But the other thing, too, remember the Cowboys triplets were Aikman, Smith, and Irvin, a quarterback, running back, and receiver, not the tight end.
He went for the wide receiver, the tight end, and the unknown running back, by the way, because he's saying the running backs are not on the roster.
Now, the Cowboys did have Jay Novacek, who was a darn good tight end, and I think Evan Ingram actually fits that mold really well, because Novacek was an okay blocker, good blocker, but not he wasn't the biggest guy. He was actually pretty small for a tight end.
He did his job. He filled his role.
But he's a dynamic receiver.
And they also had Alvin Harper as their number two wide receiver, which
but
is not too shabby.
I think the Giants need to figure out, A, you know, Eli might be here for a couple more years. We'll see how that works out. But you got to figure out who your future quarterback is, whether it's next year or 3 years from now. Who knows? You're right. Then you got to find a running back, which I don't think has to be the third overall pick or second overall pick in the draft. You can – me and you are not on the same page on the quarterback. I think we're on the same page with the running back, and
I'm
so is
Dottino. The running back,
Top three, you probably don't have to go there. You can find one later on in the draft. As good as Saquon Barkley probably is going to be, that's probably not where I would go. But you're right. You got Beckham. You figure out your running back, your quarterback. But you're right. Without the offensive line, what have we learned? You can add all the weapons you want to an offense. If the O-line's not there to consistently protect the quarterback and run the football, you might get some big plays here or there, but you're not going to consistently get the type of scoring you need out of your team.
Well, look at the Steelers. They got the killer bees in terms of Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, and Antonio Brown, which I think is as fair a comparison to that Dallas Cowboys 90s point.
Absolutely.
Right? But what does Pittsburgh have? Pittsburgh has consistency on the offensive
Pouncey,
line.
Pouncey, Villanueva, all those guys.
Well, that's the big difference. So, you know, if you want to look for a model, Vic, I would say go to the current game, look at what Pittsburgh did. That's where I think the Giants want to get to. And then we have something to talk about because you have the offensive line to complement the weapons.
And I think the Saints are another great example.
New Orleans, yeah.
Now, they have a two-headed running back situation, but
they don't really have like a – I mean, they have good wide receivers.
I mean, Michael Thomas is going to be a Pro Bowl wide receiver this year. But they have balance, Lance. For the first time since, like, 2010, the Saints have some damn balance.
Yeah.
Whether you're talking offense, defense, but, you know, their defense is better now. But more specifically in the offense, they can run the ball. Ramchek, you know, is a good right tackle. Their offensive line has protected Drew Brees. They have Michael Thomas. They have the two running backs. They play defense. You need a balanced team. You look at the really good teams in the league, very few of them have a gaping hole where you say, oh, my goodness, that's brutal. It's hard to survive those in the NFL these days. You need to have balance. And I think whoever ends up putting together the new Giants roster over the next few years, that's what you have to achieve. You got to make sure that you're not going to be great everywhere. The NFL doesn't allow that anymore with the salary cap. But you can't be a train wreck somewhere. And I think that is what hurts teams a lot of the time.
Playmakers at every level so you could find a variety of ways to win games.
And depth. So when guys get hurt, you can have a fall-off. You're always going to have a fall-off, but you can't have no hope.
Yeah, and you can't be pulling guys off the street late in the season.
Correct.
And obviously that's trouble for everywhere.
With all the injuries this year, you can't help it. What are you going to do? It happens.
That's the nature of the
beast.
But,
yes, I think that balance and depth, I think, are two very important things moving forward that the Giants need to get better at.
All right, that's going to wrap up shop here on Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Remember, the game has been moved from 4:25 to 1 p.m. Eastern. Our pregame show will start on WFAN on Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern.
Yep.
And we are at MetLife Central, so for those of you visiting the stadium, feel free to come over, watch the show, say hi as we get you set for the Giants and the Cowboys. And Big Blue Kickoff Live will be up and running on Monday. I believe it's you and I on Monday's program.
Sure.
I think recapping the festivities from Sunday's game. Enjoy the weekend. Stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest. For John Schmelk, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll see you on Monday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.
Adios.